Our meeting will now come to order. If everyone would please stand so we can pledge allegiance to the flag. And please remain standing as our invocation will be given by Wayne Bridegroom, Central Grace Community Church.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let's pray together. Lord, we say good morning. That's morning to us, even though, Lord, we know with you that you neither slumber nor sleep. But for us, we realize this is the day that you have made, and our intent is to rejoice and be glad in it. And Lord Jesus, you taught us, among other things, in how to pray, that we would pray that your kingdom come, your will be done here on earth. And Lord, as we stand here this morning, we all realize that the men in front of us are part of your plan for the accomplishment of that. Government was your idea. And so we do pray, as we always do, for wisdom for each one of them in the proceedings of this meeting. But Jesus, I just really feel compelled this morning to pray for a spirit of repentance throughout this county. Lord, you know, I was so appalled when I was in that meeting with Bishop Blair back in December to learn that only, I think it was 26% of the people voted in the last supervisorial election. And Lord, here these men are in front of us, and they're doing what you have called them to do, and yet, Father, it just seems to me that we as citizens have dropped the ball. And so I pray that just in your graciousness that you would bring the electoral citizenry, if you will, to our senses, that we would not only vote, but that, Lord, we would work beside these men that you have appointed into this position for the sake of the common good, for the sake of your will being done here in Stanislaus County as it is in heaven. I don't know exactly how you're going to go about that, but you're God, and so we're pleased to leave that in your hands, and we do so with a grateful heart in the name of the Lord Jesus. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you.
We now will have presentation. It'll be made by Supervisor Vito Chiesa for the April 2016 Assyrian Heritage Month.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning. Come on up, Hubert. It's great to be here. Maybe you can stand right here because the camera will get you a little better. This is my better side, so I was standing right. It's great to be here today again. We are proclaiming April as Assyrian Heritage Month in Stanislaus County. I'm honored to be doing this today for a couple of reasons. Number one, Turlock is the epicenter of the Assyrian community. They're a large population, a very proud population, a very heritage-driven, heritage-rich population. And I spend a great deal of time. They have a cultural center. They're constantly getting together. So I spend a lot of time in Turlock communicating with the Assyrian community, which is fantastic. So I get to present this proclamation. Then we're going to do something a little different. Instead of normally we would have them present, we give the proclamation. We're going to do it a little backwards because we can get a little historical perspective from Hubert. He's president of the Assyrian National Council of Stanislaus County, and he will introduce, hopefully he'll introduce some of your guests that are with him today. But really it's about trying to bring the Assyrian community together. They're not unlike any other segment where they're always trying to get a collective voice. We're all trying to get a collective voice. Pastor Bridegroom just talked about, you know, what our duties and obligations are. It's to speak up for the folks that maybe don't have a voice. Again, we're here today for Assyrian Heritage Month in Stanislaus County. Whereas Stanislaus County is home to a large and active Assyrian community, Stanislaus County has a number of Assyrian American clubs, churches, entrepreneurs, leaders, media platforms, and students attending higher level of learning. I will say that my previous, before me was Tom Mayfield in the District 2 seat, then there was Roland Starn before that, and there was Joash Paul, who held the seat before that, a great Assyrian leader. So rather than talking about all this, because I don't want to steal any of his thunder, because you can talk about the new year, now therefore it be resolved that in support of the Assyrian community and recognition of Assyrian New Year's 6766, the Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors of the State of California does hereby unanimously proclaim April 2016 as Assyrian Heritage Month and wishes the Assyrian community a happy and prosperous new year. So with that, I'm going to turn over the mic. First, I'm going to turn over the proclamation. On behalf.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. So I'm going to let him. He's going to grab the mic, and then he will present some facts, historical facts.
Thank you. Chairman DiGmonte, honorable supervisors, dear Supervisor Chiesa, thank you for this opportunity. I am very grateful for these words of proclamations, acknowledging Assyrian New Year and Assyrian heritage. Surely this event will stand as a great honor for Assyrian community of Stanislaus County, not only for the citizens of this county, but also for the citizens of all other cities in the United States. As I mentioned before, I feel personally most honored to be a part of this ceremony. I am sure that my colleague will be very uplifted today in such gathering has taken place. And that is a vision of our culture. Could be recognized by the supervisors of this county of Stanislaus. I would like to also give synopsis of Assyrian New Year history and heritage. We call it Rishit Nisan or Nisanu. At the time of vernal equinox, the beginning of the spring season, all other nations such as Persians, Kurds, Turks, Arabs, Tajiks, and Farsi-speaking languages have adopted and named their own national names such as Nowruz. Assyrian community of Stanislaus and all over the globe will celebrate this event. The Assyrian 6,766 years of March 21st and up to first week of the April. They wish health, prosperity, peace to all Assyrians, including those in custody of ISIS in the Syria province of Khobar. And thank you very much to all. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Hubert, did you want to introduce your guest that you brought
yes,
with you?
I'm sorry. I was excited. I'll start it with our chairlady public relation, Jermaine Daniel. She's one of our peers for this really community. She's been doing this for many years, and really I'm proud of her. Our board of my vice president is Ben Benjamin, and Mr. David Benjamin, the board of directors. Our supporters, Ed and his wife, Sherry. Sherry is the wife of sister of Jermaine, and my wife, Carmen Valadio, they are here. But the others, they couldn't make it because they are all working, unfortunately. In the beginning, I asked that if we can do this event in the evening, since we did it in the city of Turlock, but it seems different way. And Lodman Baz is sitting here. I couldn't see her. She's one of our board of directors also. These are my really peers that they are helping us to move this movement. We have a lot of in play to do for our community, education, cultures, helping our elderly people, young generation, sort of guide them to proper education for the futures. So these are, we have quite a bit goals in this for this community that hopefully that God will help us, and in your support, of course, will help us tremendously. And thank you very much again. Appreciate
well, thank you. Being raised in Turlock and going to school with many of you, I attended many of your functions. I must say I never mastered your dancing, but I always enjoyed it. Thank you.
We promise you we will teach you the best way.
Thank you.
Sam David, how are you? Just came in. Thank you for coming.
At this time, we'll go to presentation B, a draft plan for the proposed self-help tax measure, Stanislaw County of Government.
Good morning. I'm Kendall Flint. I'm with Regional Government Services, and I'm here to make a presentation on behalf of the Stanislaus Council of Governments regarding the upcoming expenditure plan, which we anticipate seeing on the November ballot. With me today also is Executive Director Rosa De Leon Park, and I'm just waiting to see if this comes up. I want to apologize to some of the members up here. I think you've seen this presentation a couple of times, but we'll try to keep it as interesting as possible. As you know, StanCog has been working the last several months collaboratively with all of the member agencies in the county to determine whether or not it would be viable to have a half-cent sales tax on the November ballot. StanCog, as you know, is made up of representatives from all of the jurisdictions in the county, as well as all five sitting Board of Supervisors. We started this process last year, really, and really the idea was in the last two go-rounds with an expenditure plan, the first one StanCog basically came up with the allocation of resources, and then the second time the jurisdictions were a little bit more involved. This time we actually went to the public and tried to figure out what the populace wanted to see in terms of priorities for investments for the next 20, 25 years. So we really had a very comprehensive outreach program, which involved working very closely with representatives from each of the member agencies. That'd be public works departments, county administrators, city managers, as well as civic groups within those agencies in those communities. So we were talking to Rotaries, Chamber of Commerce, voter groups, all types of people to figure out what they would like to see. As part of this, we also conducted a statistically valid telephone poll to figure out if the things that we were hearing on the ground in these particular areas were in fact the things that most of the population wanted to see. And what we heard over and over again was the huge desire for specific programs that would benefit local agencies. So in this particular plan, we have 65% of the proposed dollars that would be coming back to the local agencies under their control to determine what types of projects and programs. I was speaking with Matt Machado just briefly before the meeting began, and you know, he was telling me that county staff should be coming back before the board later this month with a list of what those projects and programs might be for the county. As we move forward with the plan, which I'm going to go over in detail here in a moment, the entire board of directors for StanCog was unanimous in its support, as well as the Technical Advisory Committee and the Citizens Committee. So the fact that we do have unanimous support and that everybody's on the same page, we do believe really positions us well for a successful run this November. So the top priorities that came out of all of those focus groups and the discussions and the poll really were, number one, fixing potholes, major streets and roads in the local communities, improving emergency response times for police and fire. We also heard quite a bit about safe routes to schools and the ability for people to make sure that their kids could get to and from elementary schools, junior highs, high schools in a safe manner. One of the things that came out was also a very high desire to increase point-to-point services for seniors, veterans, and those that are unable to take public transportation. This would be a need-based program that would help people get to doctor appointments, things like that. And it was, again, very high on the list of wants through the polling efforts. We also heard a lot about synchronization of traffic signals and improving overall congestion. Everything from Briggsmore to Carpenter, we're hearing a lot of different projects coming up, and a lot of people were very concerned about that improvement. Everyone always wants to hear about congestion relief on 99, and in many cases that might be alternative routes, and of course improving transit accessibility so that more people can go forward. Why are we going now when we've had some efforts in the past that didn't turn out so well? Well, first of all, the state transportation funds have already been pulled back this year. Sacramento overestimated the amount that it was going to be able to allocate to local agencies, and that decreased the number of millions of dollars that was going to be seen right here in Stanislaus. We also know that at this point, federal transportation studies illustrate that Modesto Metro is now one of the 20th worst roads in the country. We're also seeing challenges in the decrease in gas taxes. So we're, as a state, seeing less money coming in gas tax revenue. And then on top of that, people are using more fuel-efficient cars, which is, again, reducing the amount of funds that are coming to us. The poll also told us that at this point, roughly 65.4% of likely voters in the November election would support the tax. Now, that's not enough to pass it, but it's a good place to start. And at this point, we're going back out into these communities and trying to educate people about what is involved, what benefits there may be for local populations. the last part of that, which we're finding, of course, is vehicle repairs. The fact that people spend anywhere between $500 and $700 a year annually on everything from new tires to fixing dings and windshields, this is all related directly to poor quality, poor pavement condition on a countywide basis. So this is a snapshot of what the expenditure plan actually looks like. You'll notice the biggest chunk, 50%, is for those local streets and roads, and those would be determined, of course, by the local agencies. 5% will be going to bicycle and pedestrian improvements, and 10% will be going to traffic management. And again, that would be increasing signalization, working with interchanges, intersections, this sort of thing, again, controlled by the local agencies, that's 65%. Regional projects will get 28%, and then 7% goes to others. So when we're looking at these things on the local streets and roads, it's basically $19.2 million a year that'll be spent countywide directly for local roadway maintenance and improvements. The regional projects have not been identified yet, but we are in discussions about that at this time. Likely candidates may include North County Corridor, 132, and potentially South County Corridor, but there are also some other projects out there of regional significance. So the Stancog Board will be hearing about that at its May meeting and hopefully determining at that point which projects may be funded. Traffic management, again, that's a local control. This will help with goods movement. This will help with intersections and, of course, improving overall traffic flow. Mentioned also bicycle and pedestrians getting 5%. That can be for improvement on bike lanes, connectivity. That can be sidewalks, anything that helps people move about their communities in a more efficient manner. Now, the 7%, this did not exist in the previous two expenditure plans that were considered. We have four elements of that. The first one, of course, is the point-to-point services for seniors and veterans. At this point, those are door-to-door services that may be provided through the MOVE project, which is already in place. This essentially triples the capacity moving forward and allows more people to take advantage of those particular types of services, a good thing considering we have an aging population. We also have community connections. That's very prevalent in the county especially. We have a lot of pockets of communities that don't have good access to public transportation or even who don't have bus stops or the ability to, you know, get from point A to point B. So this will be improvements that can either improve bicycle and pedestrian pathways to transit or enhancements to transit stops and other ways that we can get people connected to the area. Transit improvements, just what it sounds like, these are operational and infrastructure. So this could be fare box subsidies, this could be new buses, this could be new lines, and this is all being developed collaboratively from the transportation providers here in the county. And then finally, we have one element that's for rail. I know that there was a lot of consideration for including ACE in this package initially. It just did not poll well with the voters, so Stancog worked very closely with ACE, and this particular segment really allows for an increase in van services connecting people to both ACE, BART, and Amtrak services, as well as an education program to get more people aware of ACE and aware of its benefits so that potentially it could be positioned for future investment should additional funds come available by the state or other areas. So our proposed timeline, we're here in the March to May section of time, so we're going out and talking to all the various jurisdictions. The county and the city of Modesto are the last two of the presentations for the jurisdictions, so those are both today, obviously. We're continuing to work with the local agencies to develop project lists. We anticipate that those will be finalized in April and then presented again to the Technical Advisory Committee as well as the Stancog Board. In June, we would be providing a list of the final projects, the entire package, and then also the final ballot language for consideration by the Stancog Board. And then we anticipate that board making a request to this board to place the measure on the November ballot for 2016. Over the summer, there is a political action committee that will be forming and is, in fact, going to continue with an education program and really more of a ballot advocacy program at that point. Stancog's role for now is strictly on education, so we're only talking about what's going to be in the project, what's going to be in the expenditure plan, and how that might benefit local communities. And with that, that concludes my presentation. I'm available to answer any questions that you might have.
If not, I'm asking anyone on the board if they have any question or comment at this time.
I guess I'll comment. And you're right. We've heard this. All five of us sit on the policy board, so we've heard this over and over. But I'm glad you're here again to present, because there's public here, and they need to know the importance or what happens if we don't have a half cent sales tax. I look at our county roads. I think our rating right now currently is a 55 on 1 to 100, 100 being a new road, 1 being essentially a dirt road. And the 55 rating is about ready to drop. And I can tell you that when we start looking out at our chip seal program, when we look at our maintenance, just general maintenance program, it's going away this year. And I'm sure in the next few weeks we're going to hear that from our Public Works Department. It won't be just county's Public Works Department. It'll be most of the municipalities. So, and it comes back to a safety issue. And I look at the things that are important to us as a community that create jobs locally, and we have to have a safe community. Everyone knows that. Without a safe community, we're in trouble, and that's why it ends up at the top of our priority list. And then we have to have a skilled workforce, job ready, which is the schooling system, which everyone would agree with. And the third leg of that is infrastructure. You know, what kind of an infrastructure do you have? And that means electricity, I mean sewer, water, and roads. Roads are such an important component of economic development, and if a business sites here. So, you know, if we're prognosticators, part of the gas tax is excise, which means as the gas tax was, or the cost of gas, you're saving money at the pump, and then there's less money coming to the local municipalities to fix their roads. And it's a daunting task. It's to see how we're going to get ahead of this, even with a half-cent sales tax, even with the leveraging component that could come with this, as San Joaquin's done, because we're so far down this road of disrepair or lack of repair, I should say. So, you know, is it so severe that we can't fix it? No, it's not so severe that we can't fix it, but it's very, very important. And I would put this again at the top of our list. We see government, we had our budget hearing a few weeks ago, and things are getting better. Generally are getting better, and just about every spot except for in our Public Works Department, and instead that's going the other way. And it's not just helping ourselves, although I will tell you the greatest thing about this is every dollar will be spent in Stanislaus County, will be spent in your district. The way the formula is set out, it's sales tax based, so you know cities will do better than the county with our 1500 miles of roadway and our 55 rating, the worst rating of the 9 or 10 jurisdictions, but it is so important. I sound like a record because I'm the COG chairman, but everyone should believe that if you're on your council in Turlock or Modesto has the worst roads beyond the county, Turlock is second worst, and it just kind of goes by your city size, with Houston, the smallest city, having the best roads. And it's something that you know we need to all coalesce around. 66 and two-thirds is a tough threshold. There is no room for error on our part. The fact that we had a unanimous decision come out of the COG is unbelievable on the expenditure plan. It means that everyone didn't get exactly what they wanted, but everyone got enough. And I think that's the true statement. Now we have to come up with the regional projects. That's another difficult task, one more hurdle to get over. And then hopefully we will see this in November. So, again, thank you, Rosa. Rosa Park is working really hard, our new COG executive director. And Kendall, thank you for all your help. You guys have been doing great work.
Yeah, and I'm gonna pile on here just for a second. You know, the one thing we didn't, it's time the accountant, I'll throw the numbers part of it out here. I don't know if my mic is this on. Okay. The leveraging part, we didn't really talk about that much, but the leveraging that this comes, none of us want to increase our taxes. You know, it's not something that's in our blood to raise our taxes here. But the leveraging that we're going to get out of this, the money that we're going to get back for every dollar we put in, the dollars that we'll get back of our tax dollars that left this county and have gone to other counties is worth it just in itself. It's a good investment for us to make. You know, today's Tuesday. I've gotten two calls already in the first 2 days here of roads that are problems and roads that are dangerous and issues that are out there that people can get hurt on. Then we go into closed session here. And we sit in closed session and talk about lawsuits. People do get hurt on these roads, and then they sue the county, which is we end up paying more tax dollars. So we've just got to look at this from a standpoint as an investment. As money that we're going to invest, it's going to more than pay back to us several times over if we can pass this tax. So, again, I'm sorry the accountant stands up here and says this kind of stuff, but from a dollar standpoint, this makes so much sense that we have got to make this investment. So thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to add on, be the bearer of bad news. Our PMI number has come out, and we're now at a 46. So So we've dropped from a 55 to a 46. When pavement starts to go, it goes very rapidly. So we're just going to see it deteriorate much faster. And if I read something right, our chip seal program is now 0 miles that we're going to do. So the chip seal program where we go out and resurface is now defunct. The money coming out of Sacramento is just evaporating as fast as we can see it. Gas tax, STIP funding, you name it, it's happening. So those are just facts. And as we get closer to November, people are going to have to decide whether or not they want to invest in our roads or not. And the dollar and cents, it's going to make sense to do so, but all those facts will come out over time.
Any other comments?
I just have just a brief comment there. As said before, StanCog has dealt with this issue for quite a while, and this is the best compromise in spending that I think we can come up with. I think it's fair and it's reasonable, and as Supervisor O'Brien said, our chip seal program is completely ended, so we're not repairing the roads anymore, and they are really deteriorating at a rapid rate. I get a call or two every day for road conditions or something wrong with it, and even one yesterday where there was an accident because a car went off the road where the shoulder was low. So I think we've done the best we can with this. We've got everybody on board, all 9 cities and the counties, for an expenditure plan that I think is going to work for us. So it's I feel certain that we're going to put this on the ballot for November. Yeah, there's been a lot of work into this, and it's a little bit different than the last one we went around with, but I think this one's even better. Though I like the regional projects probably the best, because I'm out in the country, but we've got 27 or 28% of the money going into the regional projects, and someday we'd like to get the South County corridor built in my area to connect Turlock to Patterson, 99-5 on the southern route. And without being able to leverage the money that we would get from the state, that'll never happen. Anyway, just want to make those comments. I think this is about as good as it gets.
Oh, pardon me. We have a request. Erlene Stockman wishes to speak on this.
Hi, I'm Eileen.
Pardon me.
No problem. Eileen Wyatt Stockman from Ceres, and I have a question. Is this bond a 25-year measure?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. I understand that we need to fix our roads. I get that. And I understand things are changing in transportation. There's electric cars now, and somehow we're going to have to figure out how to tax those people with electric cars. I understand that we are one of the lowest counties in the condition of our roads. We are also 44th in the quality of life within our county. And projections, demographic projections, currently state that in 15 years, there are going to be more people in our county over the age of 65 than there are under the age of 18. Now, I know for some of us, that means we're not going to be driving in 15 years. And you talked about point-to-point service in the county. Well, we don't live in a vacuum here. Many of us have loved ones in San Joaquin County, Alameda County, Santa Clara County, which is all served by the ACE train. I am currently on the June 7th ballot myself, and I get phone calls and I get emails. Most of them are from young people who ask me, why don't we have the ACE train here? Why don't we have it yet? One of them was an MBA student, a candidate for an MBA who lived in Patterson, and that really surprised me, because Patterson would be quite away from where the ACE train would drive through the 99 corridor, but she thought, and she was from a farming family too, and she thought it was a travesty that we don't have ACE yet. It's not a matter of why don't we have it, it's why don't we have it yet. I have to tell you that I will not be voting for this. I'm not going to campaign against it, but I'm not going to be voting for it. I will vote for it when you get it right, when it includes a blueprint for our future, which has to include mass transportation options outside of our point-to-point service in the county. And when you get it right, I will be so on board with it, and I will help in any way I can to pass it. Thank you.
Thank you. You want to make comment? Can I respond?
Yeah, go ahead. If I could, on the ACE train component, the ACE train right now, it's about to get down to Merced, the connection to high-speed rail, and that was the whole intent when we when we're forward-looking and we think about greenhouse gas reduction. It's all predicated on connection to high-speed rail. That's about $550 million to get it down to Merced. And Senator Cannell is working feverishly on that, quite honestly. It's been his number one priority. I will also tell you that with the high-speed rail plan that just changed, now they're pushing out the connectivity to Merced to 2028, which becomes problematic for the ACE funding just due to conversations with Union Pacific and utilizing what is considered the right-of-way. So, but I can tell you, I want to assure everyone that ACE has, I think, unanimous support from the COG board. And if the money for the capital, $550 million plus the ongoing subsidy of $3 to $4 million a year, if somehow the capital was found, the train will be operated. I'm perfectly confident in that. The difficulty is in a 25-year expenditure plan that's short, it's $980 million, taking $550 million plus the ongoing subsidy would devastate it. And it didn't poll well. The one thing I think we did really well this year is we listened to the people. When it didn't pass out in the East area, we spent a lot of time with focus groups trying to understand why, you know, there was 60% or less support in those areas. And last time we did, and I wasn't a part of it, actually probably only a couple of folks here that were a part of it, but they, when you're an insider, when you're talking to your public works directors, you think you know what's right, and sometimes you forget to ask the people. And we're not going to make that mistake this time. We went out and asked the people and built the expenditure plan based on those polling numbers and these focus groups out in the community. So I think we've done a good job. I will tell you, though, that I'm very supportive of ACE. The busing system, the other thing I want to talk about is the fare box recovery ratio that makes it very difficult for us to increase the busing system. We're under a mandate of 20 cents in Modesto and Ceres and 15 cents in START, which is the county's bus system, and BLAST, which is Turlock's busing system. So that means that 20 cents of every dollar we spend to operate a bus has to come through fares. And of course, the more you raise your fares to increase, the less ridership. You suppress ridership because the most needy are using the bus. So it's a balancing act we could take, and we do have some money set aside where we could subsidize some of those lines, although probably for greenhouse gas reduction, we'll get better bang for our buck spending money getting people connected to ACE and to BART by running more buses, because we only run them from Modesto right now. Currently, from the west side, they have a disadvantage. We should start running some bus systems from Turlock, potentially even Merced, getting people to Turlock, and we start doing a shuttle service. So I hear what you're saying, and I agree with it. It's just much more difficult with the fare box on the mass transit side and the ACE funding. We'll see what comes of Senator Bell's bill, which I'm very supportive of. I know our public works director is very supportive of, but I see no movement up in the state of California right now whatsoever for a transportation bill. And that's a shame. It really is, because it's necessary if we're going to improve our roads. It's not going to be just us. It's going to have to be the state and the federal government partnering up with us. But anyways, difficult. I just thought I would.
I'm going to jump in here again. You know, just to reemphasize that polling, the polling that was done to a person, everybody on this board and on the Stancog board was for ACE train. We all want ACE train to happen. But the polling just wasn't there. The general public, if we would have increased the percentage of the expenditure plan more toward ACE train, I think 12% was what we thought we needed. If we'd have done that, the bill, the initiative wouldn't have passed. And so 12% of nothing is still nothing. It would have looked great, maybe, yeah, we did this more towards ACE train, but it would have gotten us nothing. We would have not had a ballot measure that would have passed. So these are difficult decisions that we have to make to get this thing. But our main goal at this point is to get this get us to become a self-help county. And if we were to put the ACE train up there from the polling, it would have probably killed it from happening. It would have for sure killed it from happening. So we had to make some hard decisions, and that's where we are right now.
Thank you. Well, at this point, then we'll go to public comment, and any item that's not on the agenda can be discussed up to 5 minutes. And we have a request from Talib Abdul Kabir. I hope that's pronounced pretty close.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
My name is Talib Abdul Kabir. Okay. I am a teacher at PACE. That's the Peterson Alternative Center for Education. It is part of the Stanislaus County Office of Education. I have been sent here on a mission from the teachers and the staff and the parents and the students of PACE to tell you about the road from hell. This road is located on 2nd Street, right off of Blue Gum. It runs right past the juvenile hall. The road is 225 feet long, about 13.5 feet wide, and has 38 potholes. This road is a nightmare for shocks and wheel alignments and all types of problems for cars. But even more important is the safety hazard. We have over 100 students that leave PACE every day to catch the bus. Right? And when you're driving on the road from hell, the first thing you're looking out for are the potholes. You're trying to avoid the potholes. At the same time, we have students who are being dismissed from school, some elementary school students, some junior high students, and a lot of high school students. Those of you who know about high school students and middle school students especially know that they have two concerns usually when they're walking. One is looking at their handheld device, right? And two is goofing off and communicating with their friends. These are their two biggest concerns. You put these two elements together, drivers trying to avoid potholes and students not paying attention to the road ahead, it equals disaster. And that's what's coming up if we continue this policy. Yes, we escort the students up the road. Yes, we try to tell them to stick to the right side of the road. But the road from hell can care less, right? Those potholes are a disaster. I'd like to try to reassert. We went to the county, at least I've talked with people from the county, from Terry Withrow's office, and yesterday they informed me that it's not a county road. That is not the county responsibility. It's a private road. I've talked with the city, and the city says it's not our road. It's not our responsibility to maintain it. Therefore, we're caught in a catch-22. Most recently, I've talked with some representatives from the county that said that they're looking into it and they're investigating right now the road and how it can be fixed. But that's just talk, right? You know, the message that I have from the teachers and the parents and the community members, right now this is a little thing. Let's not let it snowball into a big thing, right? Basically, we want three things. Fix it now. Thank you.
Thank you. Abdul, if I could just real quick. We are, first of all, Abdul's not a plant after our presentation here for the road tax. Your timing is perfect here. But we are looking into it. I think that there is confusion as to who the road belongs to, but I think we're going to have to fix it. The county's going to do something, and we're going to fix this road. Now, where are we going to get the money? I'm looking at Matt, and he's looking at me, growling at me right now. But that goes back to our whole road tax that we're talking about. So we will figure this thing out. We will get this road fixed. The county will step up and do this. And again, I hope you would go back and encourage the parents and everyone to vote for this road tax when it comes along, because that's where the money's going to come from to help us do these things. As we fix this road, there will probably be other roads that won't get fixed now. That's where we are right now. We're borrowing from Peter to pay Paul, but we will get in there and do something about this. And our system is complaint-driven, so we appreciate you coming forward without you telling us, not a road that I drive on or many of us see. So we will get out there and fix this. But again, I hope you become an advocate for us out there and come November for this ballot measure.
Great. Thank you very
much. Thanks, Abdul.
Thank you.
And food for thought, our pothole crew, we've reduced by 6 people. We don't have the funds to keep them employed, so our pothole crew is reduced by 6 people.
Do you have a comment? Okay, we'll go to consent calendar. Anyone on the board wishing to pull any items? If not, before the board takes any action on the consent calendar, does anyone in the audience wish to make a comment or have a question on any matter on the consent calendar? If not, I bring it back to the board.
Motion to approve the consent calendar.
Second.
There's been a motion and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Passed. We now will go to scheduled matters. The 905 public hearing to consider planning commission recommendation of approval of general plan amendment.
Good morning, Chair Monteith, members of the board, Mr. Rising, Mr. Doring, Angel Freitas, planning director. Planning department's here this morning to present the fifth cycle housing element covering the period of 2015 to 2023. The housing element is one of 7 mandatory general plan elements. However, it is the only element that's subject to certification by the state and having a defined timeline for adoption. We are presenting to you this morning a final version that we believe, in consultation with HCD, meets all of the certification requirements. With me this morning to present the housing element is Kristen Dowd, and with us is Jennifer Gaslam with Michael Baker International, the county's consultant for this project. At this time, I'll turn over the presentation to Kristen.
Good morning. So I'm presenting to you the 2015-2023 housing element update. Planning contracted with the consulting firm Michael Baker International to assist us in the development of the fifth cycle update to the housing element of the Stanislaus County General Plan, which covers an 8-year period from 2015 to 2023. As Angela said, it's a mandatory element of the general plan. It must ultimately be certified by the California Department of Housing and Community Development, or HCD. State law requires that each housing element contain the following: an assessment of housing needs, an inventory of housing resources, projected housing needs, an inventory and analysis of available sites to accommodate projected housing needs, an analysis of housing constraints, and goals, programs, and policies related to meeting those housing goals. For each housing element cycle, HCD determines the regional housing needs allocation, or RENA, for each region throughout California. The RENA represents the projected number of housing units needed for each region to accommodate estimated forecasted household growth. The RENA is a planning target, not a development quota. HCD determines the RENA for each region, and at the local level, STANCOG is responsible for determining the RENA for each jurisdiction. So for this fifth cycle, HCD proposed that all of Stanislaus County would require 21,330 units covering the years 2015 to 2023. STANCOG then distributed those allocations among the 10 jurisdictions, and unincorporated Stanislaus County was required to provide adequate sites for 2,241 units. And compared to the last cycle, the fourth cycle, this is a 40% reduction. The changes being proposed from our current housing element to this 2015-2023 housing element includes updates to household economic data, housing conditions data, housing market data, and special populations data. It also includes updates to reflect local and state changes, which includes the integration of our housing-related code amendments, which were adopted by the board in December of 2015, our updated analysis of impediments to fair housing choice, which was adopted by the board in May of 2015. It adds disadvantaged unincorporated communities information, which is connected to SB 244, and reflects the dissolution of redevelopment. The housing element has also been updated to reflect the fifth cycle RENA numbers, which includes an inventory of housing sites throughout the unincorporated area of Stanislaus County that's been updated. The document also provides an updated analysis of development constraints, such as infrastructure capacity, zoning standards, fees and exactions, and ties all this information together to determine if there are enough sites with realistic development capacity to meet the RENA. The analysis of realistic development capacity determined that the unincorporated county currently has the capacity to accommodate a total of 5,756 housing units without the need for rezoning any land, and that number exceeds the RENA allocated to the county for the fifth cycle by 3,613 units. This analysis was also separated by income group, and it showed that the county could realistically accommodate 1,594 extremely low, very low, and low-income units, which exceeds the RENA for those income categories by 726 units. The document also has been updated in terms of the goals, policies, and programs. Some of those are more technical in nature, including updates to responsible departments, funding, and timeframes. And there's also been amendments to existing programs, and a few new programs have been added. The 2015-2023 housing element includes the following five goals: to encourage provision of adequate and affordable housing for all residents, to maximize housing choice and opportunity, to conserve and improve existing housing stock, to designate sufficient sites, and to minimize governmental constraints. And each goal has a number of policies and programs which indicate how the goals will be implemented. And in terms of amendments to the programs related to those goals, we did add two new programs, the Maintenance of Assisted Units, Program 3-4, and Affordable Rental Housing Program, Program 110. We added language about regional collaboration on affordable housing strategies. We added the board's priorities for infrastructure projects into Program 3-3, Municipal Utilities. And programs with similar content were combined, such as Program 5-8 and 5-9 regarding Measure E, and Programs 2-2 and 2-4 regarding fair housing programs. In terms of the process for the housing element update, the Planning Commission held a hearing November 19th of 2015 to consider the proposed general plan amendment. No one spoke in opposition or in favor of the project, and the Planning Commission voted 6-0 to recommend approval of the project to the board. The housing element was then brought to the board in December 15th of 2015 with a recommendation for adoption. However, we did receive input from HCD prior to the hearing, which they let us know that we should not have board approval until after we got their input. And so we did amend the recommendations to the board to include acceptance of the draft and to direct staff to address any public comment received and to bring the item back to the board at a later date. And no one spoke in opposition or in favor of the project during that December board hearing, and the board voted 5-0 to approve the amended recommendations. The draft housing element was submitted to HCD for the required 60-day review period in November 2015, and they provided comments to staff in December 2015. We amended the housing element based on those comments and received and submitted it back to HCD and received a letter from them on January 12th of 2016, indicating that the draft housing element with revisions met the statutory requirements of state housing element law and that the element would comply with state housing element law once adopted and submitted to HCD for final certification. And just to summarize the changes that we made based off that first round of HCD comments, we made some minor language changes for consistency. We added a CRLA to the public participation section. We added language regarding urban-centered growth focus and evaluating any constraints with Measure E. We clarified where mobile homes are permitted, and we updated the document to reflect the adoption of the housing-related code amendments, and we updated the fee estimate for multifamily units. We also made a number of changes to programs based off of HCD's comments, and you can see those programs here. Out of this list, there were two additional programs that we added based on HCD's comments, and that includes Program 111, Analysis of Impediments, and Program 48, Emergency Shelter Capacity Monitoring. The revised housing element was scheduled to be brought back to the Planning Commission on February 18th of 2016. However, planning staff requested an indefinite continuance due to a letter we received from CRLA on February 4th, 2016, to allow us additional time to review it. After that review, the item was scheduled again to be heard on March 3rd, 2016, by the Planning Commission. However, while HCD's initial review of the comments provided by CRLA did not recommend any further program changes, upon further review and during a phone conference held on March 2nd, 2016, HCD did suggest a few additional revisions to a number of programs. And as a result, planning staff did provide an addendum to the Planning Commission on March 3rd, 2016, which outlined those recommended changes. And just to summarize, the addendum included changes to Program 1-8, Housing for Special Needs Populations, Program 2-6, State and Federal Housing Programs for Farm Workers, Program 3-2, Home Rehab Program, Program 4-6, Extremely Low Income Housing, Program 4-8, Emergency Shelter Capacity Monitoring, and additionally, it did include some revised findings. So during the March 3rd, 2016 public hearing, the Planning Commission recommended approval of the 2015-2023 housing element on a vote of 9-0 to the board. The recommendation included the language included in the addendum memo and removal of the words "the bulk of" on page 87 of the March 3rd PC memo. During the public hearing, CRLA staff did speak in opposition of the housing element, raising two concerns. One in regard to emergency shelters, specifically the 20-bed threshold for allowing emergency shelters without discretionary review, and the method for determining the bed threshold. The second was in regard to the preservation of low-income rental housing. And you can find a discussion on that on page 5 of the board report. HCD, though, was satisfied with the changes included in the addendum, in particular to Program 3-2, Housing Rehab, which did add language about the preservation of low-income rental housing. However, to address the concern with regard to emergency shelters brought up by CRLA during the March 3rd PC hearing, HCD provided an email on March 4th, 2016, the day after the Planning Commission hearing, recommending one additional revision to Program 4-8, Emergency Shelter Capacity Monitoring. Planning has made this requested change, which can be found on page 6 of your board report and includes a provision for an annual evaluation of constraints of the current emergency shelter ordinance. And any constraints found will include a revision to the ordinance within 1 year. HCD provided a follow-up email on March 15, 2016, stating that they are satisfied with the draft housing element, inclusive of the recommended amendments to Program 4-8, Emergency Shelter Capacity Monitoring, and Program 3-2, Housing Rehab. As Angela stated, the housing element is one of seven elements of Stanislaus County's general plan. State law requires all elements of the general plan to be internally consistent. The six other elements of the general plan are in the process of being updated. Planning staff reviewed the 2015-2023 housing element draft for consistency with both the current and updated general plan elements and considers the document to meet general plan consistency requirements. The Planning Commission and staff recommend that the Board of Supervisors approve the 2015-2023 housing element update and take actions 1 through 8 as laid out in the board report, which include finding the project to be CEQA exempt, finding that the project will maintain a logical land use pattern and reasonable levels of service, and find that state requirements and public comments received have been adequately considered. And that concludes staff's presentation. We are available for questions, as is our consultant, Michael Baker.
Anyone have any questions of the board this time or comment?
I do. I want to go back to the RENA numbers. We had a 40% reduction that was allocated to the county. What drop, because all the cities have complained about this for years, as well as the county, Did they get a corresponding drop of 40%, or was it just parsed out unequally? Or
I think for some, the last housing element, the county actually took on a larger burden of the RENA because of the Salida Community Plan project. This RENA cycle, it was allocated across the board. The county didn't take any greater number than any of the cities. So I think with that, there actually were some cities that may have seen a slight uptick percentage-wise. But overall, the RENA number was down for everyone.
Yeah, because they reallocated. Because we've never hit, and it's very important for the public, the reason I've heard these complaints, it hasn't been as much of an issue for the county, but because you have to have essentially land inventory zoned, set aside for this growth that we've never been able to attain, mm-hmm. even in the boon of 2003, 2004, 2005. And so there's been this push to suppress those numbers. And I know they made a little bit of leeway mm-hmm. on that. So going back to our number of 5,756, the total capacity, that's with all the different types of housing, how much of that is in the Salida plan versus what's available outside? Do you guys have just a general, is that 80%?
It is definitely a larger portion than any of the other areas. I couldn't tell you a percentage, but
It just seems to me that in my unincorporated communities of Keys and Denaire, LaGrange, and Hickman,
mm-hmm.
Hickman has maybe 20 houses they can build. LaGrange, I mean, their historical zoning, I don't know that there's anything zoned. Denaire is essentially built out. Keys has one more subdivision. So I don't know where all that land inventory is. Short of, do you consider houses that can be built in the unincorporated area and farm? Can that be considered a part of this, or is that excluded? Say I'm allowed to put two houses on my parcel, and I only have one.
Yeah, that's excluded. Actually, we were very conservative in the number of units. We could have looked to potential subdivisions. We didn't even go there. We just...
It's good.
Yeah, it was very... but just to answer your question, Salida has 4,361 identified units, and then in comparison, South Ceres has 23, so...
Okay.
It is quite a bit of a difference.
I like that you didn't go there. That's my preference, by the way. So then Measure E, it comes back to Measure E. We always have to talk about that. It's more for the public's edification. Measure E does not allow any more subdivision in the unincorporated area that wasn't zoned pre-2008 or 7, passed in. No, passed
in 2008.
2008. So what's locked in is locked mm-hmm. in, and then it will take a vote of the people. So if someone wants to put a subdivision in Keys, or in Crow's Landing, they need to go to vote of the people of Stanislaus County. Now, there are some exclusions on farm worker housing, mm-hmm. and I don't remember exactly. Can you enlighten me again on what Measure E allowed? Do you remember?
Measure E, essentially any land that wasn't already zoned residential would require a vote of the people. There are some allowances based on density and income level where you can carve out some housing that would not be subject to the vote of the public. I don't remember the specifics.
Okay. This seems like a step in the right direction, mm-hmm. though, compared to what I've seen in the past. So thank you.
Any other comments?
And I believe that the farm labor housing was one of those exemptions from Measure E, the best I can remember.
I believe you are correct. I just don't recall the specifics. It had to do with income level and densities and the type of housing.
Yeah, and I think farm labor housing was exempt. I know there's been a ton of work gone into this document. It has went on for a long time, and what I can see, it meets all the statutory requirements that we have to comply with, and we've taken in consideration comments from CRLA, and it's went back and forth and been amended, and I think this overall is a good document that we have more than two times the amount of housing that would be required minimum of marina, that I see no problem with this document. It's been well thought out and been a ton of work has went into it. So I'm satisfied with it in its current form.
Any additional comments? If not, I'll open it to the public at this time. They wish to make any comments or concerns.
Hi, does this report and this needs allocation take into account that our most recent housing booms were mostly McMansions, what they're calling McMansions, large scale houses for more affluent people. Can you help me read that into the report where that part is?
Okay, sure. Any of those units would be considered above moderate units.
Mm-hmm.
And then in addition to this, which is the plan, we do an annual report, which will count how many low-income, moderate, and above moderate income units. And for the last cycle, when we did do that report, which is not included in this presentation, but it was mostly above moderate units that were created in the last 8-year planning cycle.
Mm-hmm.
I think we had created approximately 300 units over the last 5 years, which isn't a lot. And probably 80% of those were above moderate units.
So this projection, though, is going to account for that, or?
This projection requires us to have a certain percentage of low-income units, mm-hmm. just solely because of
please
that.
Please speak to the board, please.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
That's quite all right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, my question is, are we going to have enough middle-income housing, not just lower-income housing and not three-car garage affluent housing, but where are we on the middle-income housing projection?
As part of this process, we're required to look at what our regional need is based on income levels. And the chart that's up before you breaks down what the RENA allocation is based on extremely low, very low, and low income, moderate, and above moderate. So while the reality is that we've seen more above moderate housing developed, we have shown in the housing element that we have the capacity of available land to be able to build and provide for the needs of the various different income levels.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? If not, I'll bring it back to the board. What's the board's decision?
I'll move to approve staff recommendations.
Is there a second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? It's passed. Thank you.
Thank you.
We now will go to B9.
Good morning, Chairman Monteith, members of the board, CEO Risen, and Mr. Doring. My name is Christy Santos. I'm the director of Alliance WorkNet. I do have to apologize. I'm losing my voice. There was a lot of yelling in my household last night, all directed at the TV, so I have to apologize. I'd like to introduce Martha Sanchez. She is an analyst supervisor at Alliance WorkNet. She will be driving the presentation for me.
Before you start, Christy, did your team win or lose?
They lost.
Oh,
tell you, I'm still recovering. I'm here to next slide, please. I'm here to briefly summarize a new legislation that impacts the county's workforce development agency, Alliance WorkNet. We are governed by the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. Formerly, it was the Workforce Investment Act. And this new act was signed into law in 2014. It's a bipartisan piece of legislation that was specifically written to streamline the delivery of services among partners for job seekers and employers. It was also expressly written to get private business involved and at the table in workforce development through the workforce development boards. We refer to it as WIOA, another acronym to add to your list. One thing to mention about WIOA, it has mandatory competitive procurement language for certain services written in the language. In January of 2016, David White, CEO of the Business Alliance, and I brought several action items to the Workforce Investment Board Executive Committee, requesting approval to procure one-stop operator services, Business Services, Career, and Youth Services. This executive committee approved the actions, and along with approving those actions, also approved a model that would terminate the current memorandum of understanding between Alliance WorkNet and the Alliance, or the Business Alliance. The action requires that the current Workforce Investment Board and all subcommittees be dissolved as of July 1, 2016. Other impacts of those actions would be to create a new Workforce Development Board in accordance with WIOA, which would be effective July 1, 2016. It would also allow the Board of Supervisors as the chief elected officials to have the authority to appoint members to the new Workforce Development Board as long as that the appointments meet the minimum requirements of WIOA. It also would require, as I mentioned, a competitive procurement of services in which county staff are delivering today. And those services include one-stop operator, which are the operations of our resource centers throughout the county, business and career services, and a note that youth services today are already procured out and they will remain procured out into the future. So some of the staffing impacts of the procurements include 6 full-time equivalent positions which are performing business services today under the direction of Dave White. And those 6 full-time positions would no longer be performing these duties effective July 18th. We would be using the county's reduction in force process to delete these positions and find employment in another county department. And the business services component will be competitively procured out, which we are anticipating the release of the RFP in the April or May timeframe. Another, just some noteworthy things to mention about WIOA. There is reference to a waiver process in which the chief elected official for Stanislaus County, that is Chairman Monteith and the board, have the right to request a from the governor's office for the county to continue delivering services. However, to date, there is no waiver process in place, and the governor's office has been completely silent as to any future process or when they might put a process in place. There are draft regulations out currently today that require the procurement of career services. We are anticipating that Department of Labor will be putting out final regulations in late summer. And we don't anticipate any changes in the draft regulations, but if they do come out substantially different from what is out in draft today, we would like to bring those back to the board for consideration. And with that, I promise to be brief, but we have about 7 staff recommendations for you to consider. The first being to authorize the chairman of the Board of Supervisors to dissolve the current Workforce Investment Board and all subcommittees and terminate any and all extant agreements or contracts with the Stanislaus County Business Alliance as of June 30, 2016. Authorize the formation of the new Workforce Development Board that will satisfy the requirements of the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. Number 3, approve the bylaws for the Workforce Development Board, which will allow the new board to function as of July 1, 2016. Number 4, authorize the Chief Executive Officer and Director of Alliance WorkNet to begin recruitment for the new Workforce Development Board and direct staff to post Workforce Development Board vacancies. Number 5, authorize the purchasing agent on behalf of Alliance WorkNet to issue a request for proposal for one-stop operator business and career services in accordance with the provisions of WIOA for adults, dislocated workers, and youth that will best serve the needs of job seekers and businesses in Stanislaus County. Number 6, approve the reduction in force of 6 full-time positions in the Alliance WorkNet budget unit as outlined in the staffing impact section of this report effective July 18th, 2016. And finally, number 7, amend the salary and position allocation resolution to reflect the changes as outlined in the staffing impact section of this report effective July 18th, 2016. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions or concerns of any member?
No, it's a very complicated process, and as it boils down, we really don't have an alternative to do so. What it does is move some of these, moves the training to be controlled by people on the outside, by business and industry, are really going to influence how and our future employees are trained. But it boils down to federal law states we have to do this. It has to be in place by July 1st, and with the governor's office not responding to any sort of process that we can appeal, we've got to get the ball rolling. And so it will be a good thing in the end, but it's a lot of transition. It's very complicated, and I just want to thank staff for wading through it, both staff on our side, staff on the Alliance side, for getting through all these requirements of the federal government.
Yes.
Just real quick, Christy, this is intensely and complicated how this has all worked out and played out. In our fiscal impact, we talk about 600,000 amount we originally had allocated to the Alliance, and we're talking about 900,000 now as we contract that out. Is that because there's about 300,000 that we're spending on our own that now we will no longer spend, and it will then be, we'll have the 900,000 because someone else will be doing that? Is that?
So today, we allocate about $650,000 in cash to the Business Alliance to perform business services under previously WIA and now WIOA. And then we also have the 6 staff who are county staff who are performing those duties under the direction of Dave White. I would say rounding up the 6 staff, which includes a supervisor, is right around $750,000 in staff work. We are looking for competitive bids for the business services process. We do want to make sure that we don't inhibit creativeness. And so in the agenda item, we did put that the budget for the business services RFP would not exceed $900,000, but we do anticipate that the bids would come in for less than that.
Okay. And again, we're going to be safe because we're not going to, those positions are going to be eliminated.
Correct.
And that savings will be there, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Any additional comments?
And again, that's a requirement. Everything has to be bid out now. County staff can't do it. So we're following the letter of the federal law.
Yeah, and this is a requirement, the federal government, so we have to do this. And I really think that having business more involved in, you know, workplace development is probably a better idea anyway. You know, it makes it a little bit more streamlined. And, you know, having I think it was 54-member board, it's a little cumbersome to get anything done with 54 members. So cutting that in half, I think, would just speed up the process. Overall, I think this is going to work out better once it's all sorted out.
Anyone else? And now I'll open it to the public. Any comments? If not, I'll bring it back to the board.
Motion to approve all staff recommendations.
There a second?
I will second that.
Been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? It's passed. Thank you.
Thank you.
We now will go to correspondence.
This board has received a copy of the projected budget for fiscal year 2016-2017 leases, prices, concessions, fees, and the schedule for the 2016-17 season from the Gallo Center for the Arts.
Acknowledged receipt, refer to the Chief Executive Office.
This board has received a notice from the San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District regarding the extension of the request for proposals for alternative fuel infrastructure projects.
Refer to the Department of Public Works.
This board has received a notice that the City of Modesto will be holding a public hearing on April 12, 2016 at 5:30 p.m. to consider an amendment to their general plan housing element.
Refer to the Department of Planning and Community Development.
This board has received a letter from the U.S. Department of Energy regarding the availability of the final environmental impact statement and report for the proposed San Luis Transmission Project.
referred to the Department of Planning and Community Development.
This board has received a letter from the South San Joaquin Irrigation District and the Oakdale Irrigation District requesting support of regulatory and legislative changes to implement predator fish suppression programs in California waterways.
Referred to Fish and Wildlife Committee.
This board has received a copy of the California State Board of Equalization annual report for fiscal year 2014-15.
Acknowledge receipt of report.
This board has received a notice that the Sylvan Union School District will be holding a public hearing on April 12th at 7 p.m. to consider adjusting Level 1 developer fees for inflation.
Referred to the Chief Executive Officer.
And this board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claims, referred to the Chief Executive Office, Risk Management Division. Thank you. Now at this time, do any of the board have a report? If not, then I'll go to the legislative, fiscal, and management report by our CEO, Dan Reisen.
Just really quick, I'd like to report that the week before last, Chairman Monteith, Supervisor Chiesa, Director of Ledge Affairs David Jones, and I traveled out to Washington, D.C., had a very whirlwind trip, meeting with the offices of Senator Barbara Boxer, Congressman Denham, and Costa. HCD, Veterans Affairs, and the Economic Development Administration. So it's kind of a real whirlwind trip, but I thought they were effective visits, and thought I'd report that out.
Thank you. This meeting now is adjourned, but it is also followed by a closed session, and I'll refer to County Council, Mr. Doring.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we have a conference with legal counsel to discuss significant exposure to litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9 Subdivision D2. Involving one matter, we do not expect a report out. It would be appropriate to see if there are any public comments on this matter.
Thank you.